From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Across the landscape of healthcare, the idea of long-term care for the elderly or disabled is changing. One of those changes is what's known as managed care, where states contract out medical services for those who need it long-term. Some states say that it saves money by fixing their healthcare costs, but others say managed care can keep patients from getting the help they need. Today, we'll talk to healthcare providers and the Florida Healthcare Association about how managed care is changing the way Floridians get healthcare in nursing homes and other long-term facilities. Plus, the dreaded Burmese python. Whether the big snake makes you squirm or not, this invasive species has a foothold in Southwest Florida, and a new study suggests that all the hunts and harvests aren't doing much to stop their advance through the Everglades and into our own backyards. Today, we talk with a biologist who's been tracking and recording the behavior and travel patterns of Burmese pythons about what he's discovered and how that research will eventually give humans a winning edge over this infinitely adaptable invader. First, the news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. South Florida's Burmese python problem has gotten international attention with sanctioned python challenges where hunters from across the country wade into the swamps to compete for bragging rights as to who got the most snakes. Arula tribesmen have been brought in from India to track and kill the invasive predators. And now South Florida Water Management District announced it would pay python hunters by the foot for the Burmese that they bag. But while that may satisfy the inner barbarian, it may not make much of a dent in the real population of a snake that can lay up to 100 eggs at a time and reach sexual maturity at only 2 years. That's why biologists like Ian Bartoszek from the Conservancy of Southwest Florida spends his time tracking them to learn their behaviors and find ways to get ahead of the booming population. He joins us in the studio today to talk about his research and how it can help battle the invasive snake. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you for having us.
Also here today is Tim Tetzlaff, the Director of Conservation at the Naples Zoo, where tonight a presentation will be given to the python curious about these snakes right there in front of the python exhibit at the zoo, which, Tim, I have to tell you, is always a big draw whenever we go. There's always a huge crowd there. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you, Julie.
We are talking about pythons in the Everglades and in Southwest Florida. Do you have a question or a comment? Give us a call at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK, or you can find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. First, Ian, these guys are called Burmese pythons, which leads me to believe they're from Burma. Is that correct?
True. They're from Southeast Asia, and they are one of the largest snakes on the planet.
So how did they get here?
They got here from the pet trade. We had hundreds of thousands brought into South Florida probably since the early 70s. And then whether they were intentionally released or they escaped, they are now populating the greater Everglades ecosystem.
So when did they start noticing that people were letting them out and they started nesting and breeding out there?
I don't think they ever noticed people were releasing them, but 1979 is kind of a start date in Everglades National Park. And in the 80s, early 80s, they started seeing these animals appear more and more on the roads. And then early 2000s, park biologists realized that they were reproducing, hatchlings were being found on the road.
So how many do you think are out there in Florida right now?
That's anybody's guess. We're talking thousands, possibly hundreds of thousands of Burmese pythons across the greater Everglades.
I mean, I know you can't believe everything you see on the internet, but I saw one that was like up in the hundreds of thousands.
It's possible. I'd say somewhere tens of thousands. And whether we're talking about the entire population or actually the breeding adults, that's a different number. Those numbers are hard to quantify.
Yeah. Is there a northern border as to how far up the state they'll go?
Currently, I know of the wild population around Lake Okeechobee. So they're cold-sensitive animals, so a good freeze will really knock them back. But we found them to use underground burrows and things like that to wait out cold spells.
I comfort myself thinking that they're all way out in the Everglades, parts that are accessible only by airboat rides. And I don't own an airboat, so I feel pretty good about it. But are they close to neighborhoods in Southwest Florida?
Well, they are creatures of disturbance. They will follow berms and levees and canal systems. So they are on our doorstep here to the urban environment.
What is the likelihood of actually kind of coming across one for like a regular person that lives in a gated community somewhere?
It's very unlikely. In fact, you're probably going to see a native snake 10 to 1. And to that point, you know, we have 46 native species of snake in Florida, and they're all provide a tremendous ecological service. This one happens to be an invasive snake species that reaches an incredible size and has tremendous impact on our native wildlife. But our native snakes, if we need them in the ecosystem. So I hope from this interview, people don't leave more afraid of snakes.
Yeah, I know. It's hard, though. It's kind of that visceral, down-in-the-bone-marrow reaction that a lot of people
have. I get it. It's hardwired, and they share evolutionary history with us for many, many aeons, so it's hardwired.
But a lot of people love snakes, too. I mean, as you mentioned, they had them as pets, which is also not a great idea.
I do as well, so when we catch
the Burmese, anyway.
When we catch these animals, I don't like having to put them down humanely, but they need to get out of the ecosystem.
So I wanted to ask you real quick, I know we're talking mainly about Burmese pythons and your study that you did, but I wanted to ask real quick about other invasive snakes.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of other ones?
Or other invasive species. Remember, this is the poster child for invasive animals, whether it's lionfish off the coast or exotic snails that are out there in the system or plant species or even Nile monitors or Argentine tegus. The Burmese python is definitely a poster child for the invasive animal issues that Southwest Florida are facing. And as Tim likes to mention,
we've got more non-native reptiles and amphibians in Florida than anywhere else on Earth.
You know, I think I actually saw a native little lizard, the bright green one. Is that one native?
That might be our only native lizard.
I know, I saw one. I was so excited. I heard that is actually a native one, and I was pretty thrilled to see it. But they're always the little dark brown ones and the black ones. But there are a ton of invasive. Do we have any anacondas?
Breeding, not known about. But there have been reports back in the day of individual anacondas found dead on the road.
As well as reticulated pythons, which that takes us for the top three pythons on the planet being
what
found in our state.
Reticulated python, that's different from a Burmese?
Yes, it is. Yeah, they actually get longer than Burmese pythons. So there are some retics out there. We've got actually one that's almost 20 feet long at the zoo right now, so people can get an idea just how big they can get.
Is that who's in the python exhibit there?
Yes,
at the zoo?
We've got both a reticulated python and a Burmese python in the
exhibit.
Okay,
so tell me about these two, because I look at them every time I go across from the tigers there. So who you have two in that one cage. Are they two different kinds?
Yes. Yeah, the reticulated python, Ka, for you Jungle Book fans, is almost 20 feet now. And that's on the high side. I mean, that's bigger than a Burmese python is going to get. And then the Burmese python that we have in there is between 10 and 11 feet right now, which is about average for what they're finding out there in the greater Everglades right now.
I'm cracking myself. You mean the little one, which is 10 feet long?
Exactly.
So what do these guys eat there at the zoo?
So once you get into the larger sizes, you're mostly looking at rabbits.
Rabbits? Okay. So how much do they go through in a day? I mean, like as far as poundage of meat?
The wonderful thing for the greater Everglades is they don't eat like mammals because they are cold-blooded. They're ectotherms. So they can eat once a week. If it's a really big meal, it can go even longer than that. So the problem we have with the Burmese pythons in the greater Everglades is they are eating us out of house and home. So not only is there a direct impact on the species they're eating, but also all the other animals that needed to eat those animals.
Yeah, other predators that are out there.
Right. There's a bobcat looking for a bunny right now, but unfortunately that bunny is in the belly of a Burmese python.
And if it takes hundreds of species of native wildlife to feed a Burmese python to get that up to adult breeding size, and there's thousands of Burmese pythons, maybe hundreds of thousands, we're starting to get a sense that they're eating their way through the greater Everglades, and they're turning our native species into giant snake.
You know, I had a rancher on a while back, and he was concerned about panthers, and he said he blamed panthers for the lack of small game, like, you know, rabbits and other little things, but it could be the pythons.
I can't speak to that. I would say, you know, the pythons, they start with small mammals, mice, rats, and then they graduate up, eat the mesomammals and the wading birds. So I have talked to some farmers out there that they do say, you know, we just don't see the raccoons or the possums anymore. And there are some studies that occurred on the East Coast where marsh rabbits were outfitted with radio telemetry devices released in Everglades National Park. Within 6 months, 77% of those rabbits were tracked back to the belly of python. So that's some direct evidence. And you'd be hard-pressed to find a rabbit in Everglades National Park. Think about that. So they really are. We're starting to see the initial effects of this new invasive apex predator in the South Florida ecosystem.
And then I'm thinking about all the rabbits that I see in my neighborhood, and I'm wondering if they're going to be chasing them into
other areas. It is a prey base for them, but these animals, they're creatures that they need to hide. The urban environment is really conducive to them, although Miami-Dade is having quite the problem outside of Homestead. A lot of these animals are showing up in places that they shouldn't. We would not like to see that happen here in South Florida, so About 4 years ago, we started a pretty exciting research project using radio telemetry to track Burmese pythons here in Southwest Florida.
Yeah, that's what I want to get to next. I'm really excited about it. But I want to let people know that they can give us a call, though. We're talking about pythons in Southwest Florida. We're talking with Southwest Florida biologist Ian Bartoszek, and we're also talking with Tim Tetzlaff, who is the director of conservation at the Naples Zoo. If you have any questions about these Burmese pythons, give us a call at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU Talk, or you can find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media, on Twitter at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Also on Facebook, you'll be able to see a photo that was just taken of a python skin that Ian brought in for us to take a photograph of. So there's a little more visual evidence to our story. Tell me about this study. So you've been tracking these guys. You catch them out in the wild.
Sure, that's the first step. But let me back up. This is a research collaboration that includes the Conservancy of South Florida, Rookery Bay National Estuarine Research Reserve, some of our federal partners at the United States Geological Survey, and then our core supporters like Naples Zoo to keep us moving forward. So in early 2013, land managers in Cayo Seminole State Park, Rookery Bay Reserve, they were coming across some large snakes, and they were showing up during the breeding season, of which right now we're at the tail end of the breeding season this month. And these animals, we're talking 15-foot snakes that were showing up on these levee features. And the question was, where do these animals go after the breeding season? What are they doing? There just was this black hole of information or lack of information there. So like you mentioned, the first step, capture these snakes. So we started in 2013. We captured five animals, and then, wow, it's been about 4 years looking back, and we've learned quite a bit about these animals since. So we have a vet, Dr. Jeffrey Noble, who we couldn't do this without his services, and we install, he surgically implants a transmitter. I have one in the studio here. I know your viewers can't see it, but...
So it looks like a...
it's a big battery case with an antenna on it.
It kind of looks like a wine cork that's red with a with a string hanging out the bottom there.
And so the next step is to release that animal that has this transmitter in him that sends out a ping on a frequency, and I have my receiver here, so I'm going to turn it on, and you can hear what we listen for. I don't know if that's coming out there.
Yeah, I can hear it.
And so we're basically listening for these animals with a directional antenna out there. So, and it's like the ultimate game of hide and seek and then hot and cold in a way. Because as we get closer to these animals, the signal gets louder and louder. It gets really creepy. And then we locate them and we record all that information. Actually, where are they hiding? What that habitat is? And any type of behavior that they're doing, depending on the season. And so we have a body of information right now that is quite sizable. And I just have to say, for some maybe your listening audience, I have walked into thousands of observations on these snakes since early 2013, and at no time has any one of these animals ever wanted to get after me.
I know. When you said something, I kind of like, eek, but they don't attack people.
No, they're entirely defensive. We've removed them from their eggs, and they'll defend that as well. But they've never aggressively come towards us. They always want to escape, hide. And, you know, we're the aggressor in that situation. But to gain that information, it's been hard earned. We will follow these animals through mangroves. There's few places we do not go to get observations on these animals and record that. But the important thing is, so that's great. We're collecting this information. We need to know our enemy. We're looking for a weakness in their armor.
Yeah, so you're gathering intel on the enemy, but then what ways do you think that intel is going to help create a battle plan?
Sure. We're looking for something that the land manager here in Southwest Florida, remember, this is more specific to our area in Southwest Florida, and we're trying to develop tools or techniques that a land manager might employ to get after the breeding population of Burmese pythons here in Southwest Florida. We're different than the Eastern Everglades, the River of Grass. We have a little more mosaic habitat type, some uplands, wetlands, and how that Burmese python is using our landscape may be a little different than the East Coast. So we, early in the season, we will actively search for these animals, hunt for them when the cool weather is out, and we will catch new snakes, and then we will employ them. I basically have 15 pythons working for us right now, male pythons that are out there during the breeding season that lead us to the females. That's the target. There's no better female python detector on the planet than
a male python.
Male python.
It's all species. It really is.
It truly is. The simplest way I explain this to folks is it's like watching the 1970s cop show where the police put the transmitter on the bad guy's car and then they follow him to the hideout. And what Ian's been figuring out and his team is, where are the hideouts? Where do these Burmese pythons like to be? Because the end game is, as you were asking, is management plans for ways to disrupt the breeding patterns. And what I'm excited about and why the Naples Zoo Conservation Fund supports Ian's work is he's working in a focused area. So over time, if you find a python here or there in your research and take it out, that's a great thing. Every python can turn into more pythons. But he's looking in a very focused area and working that area hard to remove as many from that single area as possible to see if that's going to be one of the successful ways of disrupting the larger population and giving those native wildlife a chance to survive.
Yeah, it's got to be something that's kind of hard to sell too, because people just want to just go out and do the kill 'em all approach.
Sure.
And when you look at the numbers and how quickly they can reproduce and how many they can reproduce into, it's – there's no way to get ahead of that. I mean, I don't care how good of a hunter you are.
You really do have to break down the numbers. It's great that if you hear these things, we moved 100 pythons. Like Tim said, any python out of the equation is a good one. But we're targeted on the breeding population, the females. That one female can lay an average of 40 eggs. We've seen as few as 12 and as many as 87. And you might have a picture online. I have an egg in the studio here. This is what we're after. Holding my hand, it looks like a little baked potato of sorts.
Yeah, it's like a small baked potato, like a Yukon Gold.
Sure. And imagine a large snake coiled up around, you know, 40, 50, 80 of these. And all intents and purposes, all these eggs will hatch.
I would run faster than Usain Bolt if I saw that. I'm just telling you, because if it was wanting to get defensive against me.
So that's our target. And say you removed 100 snakes, and those were 100 male pythons. Great, you removed 100 male pythons. But I would take a few females with the next generation out any day. And so we've had a laser target on this, as Tim mentioned, in a defined area. And I think we are making a dent. A little early to tell. This isn't the solution to all of the python problem, but for Southwest Florida, with the tools that we have to work with, I feel like we've sharpened one, and it's pretty effective so far.
I feel like with something this big, a multi-pronged attempt is good.
Even
having the trackers coming from India. They got, what, a couple,
I think? They got a few, and it's good to raise awareness, like the right. Python Challenge. And as you mentioned early in the broadcast, you know, they're paying professional python hunters to go out and look over the next couple months. And
how do people get a license for that?
I think they've already been permitted holders with Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission. So they're really good at – some of these guys are really good at finding snakes, whether they're on roads and levees and such. The trick is getting them off the grid. You know, it's great when they show up on a levee to hunt or a roadway. It's where do they go the rest of the year? And I believe that if you pair these approaches together, the hunting and the tracking, you can really hit back on them each breeding season.
So a couple of the stories that I read about the results of your study, you had 50 additional pythons collected or captured and euthanized by the research partners. Furthermore, 9 python nests were documented during the ongoing study and over 375 python eggs removed and humanely euthanized.
Those are way old figures. We're in the thousands of pounds of python removed during this study. Once we started getting some traction with this and built up our male snakes in the program that were working for us, right now, just to give you sort of a week in the life here, this Monday I flew in the airplane for radio telemetry, and I happened to have two teams on the ground that we were directing to where we were getting the signal at. And some of them were kind of going in and following some males that led them to other females, and then those animals were removed and humanely euthanized. And today my team's out. They're taking advantage of this cold weather. These animals are ectothermic. They break cover when the sun comes out. They've got to charge their solar panels, if you will. And
So when it's cold out, they'll go out and lay out and get some sun.
If it's too cold, we really have this dialed in. We can go out and actually. It's funny, we talk amongst ourselves. We say that sun feels really good just right about now. There's a window that comes out where those animals will break cover and bask, and we didn't really have a winter this year to utilize that. And we were still effective at capturing animals, but we were very effective at tracking the males back to females this breeding season, the previous breeding season. And as Tim mentioned, in that defined area, constant pressure at the breeding population may prove that it's successful for here, but early to tell.
Well, I saw a story about in 2015, you had 2 radio-tagged male pythons found transmitting from the same gopher tortoise burrow.
Sure.
In Rookery Bay National Estuarine Research Reserve, the burrow was excavated and a total of 7 Burmese pythons were found to be breeding in one burrow.
Right. That was an interesting day of the life of the project. I believe it was 2014 in March. And yes, the two of my one male snake named Kirkland that was caught by Rookery Bay staff was pinging from that burrow. And we thought that very interesting. This was really before we understood how often they use these burrow features. But then I was listening and I dialed up the Python number one. His name happened to be Elvis. We do name our pythons. I know Elvis. It sounds silly, but when you have so many of them.
Did he have sideburns?
No, but he's kind of an escape artist, so he always left the building.
Oh,
so
okay.
That's kind of why he got that name. And he was broadcasting, pun intended, I guess, from the same burrow. So those animals were moved, and you're right, there were seven pythons in there, and there was one female. So six male pythons, one 13-foot female python, and lo and behold, when they were all removed, there was a tortoise stuck in the back of that
burrow.
Poor
little guy.
So he was traumatized. We tried to put him back in the burrow. He must have been forced to
watch. I'm not going back in there.
No, he has therapy sessions ongoing. But that was intense to see that, and that, to kind of bring it home to this month, that's the tail end of the breeding season. So March is
– in that March thing.
Yeah.
So do you ever have any python hunters coming to you with one of these tracking devices? They accidentally took one out that you had a tracker in?
No. In fact, when certain entities were sort of poking around over here, looking around, hunting, I found it interesting to see if they'd ever find one of these snakes with a transmitter in it, because they're hard for me to find when they actually are
pinging
at us, because they're so cryptic. They're often hidden. They rarely break cover.
Mm-hmm. And Tim, what kind of education do you do at the zoo with people regarding pythons? Like, do you advise people like what to do if you see one, or how to handle things, or maybe the difference between it and others so you don't inadvertently try to attack a native snake?
Absolutely. So we've got some educational panels there, as well as a Meet the Keeper presentation that happens daily. So the direct communication from our staff, we've got biologists there that can talk to people through these questions, which we make available every day. And then also we talk about the study on our interpretive graphics there, but also an important tool for folks is an app they can get for free, and it's available for both Android and the iOS system. So it's called I've Got One. And it's IVEGOT, the numeral one, .org, if you want to go it that way. And basically it lists all those invasive species that are here in Florida. So when they see one, they can actually take a picture, upload it, they can document it, and that way, the coordinates there on the photos when you take it with your phone. So you can record this. And like Ian said, the odds of you finding one of these animals is remote. Even in the areas where they're moving around neighborhoods, people aren't reporting they're not seeing them.
Well, they blend right in.
They are fantastic at doing that. The discovery rate is like 1%, which is why we're excited about the work that Ian's doing with the radio telemetry. It's been done a couple other places successfully. And so that puts a tool in your hand that the person just walking around will never have. And so combining these things and coming up with some management practices to, like I said, the greater Everglades wildlife needs a chance. And taking out as many of these pythons in the most intelligent and scientific way possible is the goal.
And I wanted to ask you, you talked about humanely euthanizing them. How is that done? Is it like a shot?
We usually have veterinary assistance because we can do that. So humane euthanasia is just, it's a quick, painless death, whatever the definition of that is.
And that's good for people who like snakes to know. That you're just
definitely
not, yeah.
No, I these are amazing animals. I have a lot of respect for them, and remember, they're here for no fault of their own. They're in our ecosystem, but we put them here.
Yeah.
And we've got what, Tim, 46 native species of snake.
Yes.
And they're all remarkable, and so I hope from this broadcast it just doesn't increase fear more. We happen to have one that got out of the bag and escaped and is wrecking havoc through our greater ecosystem. But
well, I think everybody's nervous right now about the cobra that's loose in Ocala.
Yeah, I saw that. Another one, right?
That'll wake people up.
Yeah,
that's the challenge. When an invasive species is out there, people are like, well, it's just another snake. What's the problem? But like you mentioned Usain Bolt a little while ago. It's like putting Usain Bolt against some elementary school kids on their field day. Which one's going to win the 100-yard dash? Gee, I wonder. This is an animal that is built to live in this environment, and the animals that are here aren't used to that animal.
And they're not built to compete with that.
Not at all.
Yeah. So a couple of years ago, I wanted to ask you, I know we're almost out of time, but there was a training event that you had with a number of state and local conservation groups showing people the correct way to capture a python. Mm-hmm. And that was an effort to educate people that work as land managers in order to be able to know how to, like, so, and I guess the point of that was to train people on how to capture them in case somebody calls, that would get some more people trained so that you could get there quicker in order to get them. Has that worked out?
Correct.
Have you gotten anything
That's
out of that?
That's the responder training that the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission puts on. And so that those are for those professionals that may encounter this, or people so inclined that when somebody does call that, there's a hotline number for that app, that 888 I've got one. When you're standing there and you're seeing that giant snake, they will call that responder in that region, and that can be successful. The best way that works is just a quick example is there's an elderly couple that were walking down a bike trail somewhere around Naples, and somebody definitely spotted a python, and somebody called the hotline. They didn't have a phone number, but they went and made a call. Somebody else stayed nearby, watched where that snake kind of crawled off to, and then a responder showed up, pointed it up. Person caught the snake, put it in a bag, and then took it to the proper facility.
Well, it's good that that worked out. So we're going to have to wrap things up, no pun intended. Ian Bartoszek, wildlife biologist for the Conservancy of Southwest Florida, and Tim Tetzlaff, gosh, I can't talk now, director of conservation at the Naples Zoo. Thanks for taking the time out ahead of this busy day with your conference tonight. And if you want any more information about that conference, you can go to wgcunews.org, where we have links not only to that, but also to information on the Conservancy's work in this study of these big snakes. Our show today was produced by Matthew Smith and directed by Richard Chin Kui. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Julie Glenn. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers, 90.1 WMKO Marco Island, 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.
Well, what a wonderful black snake song. Well, what a wonderful black snake song. Lord, that black snake, mama, don't run my darling home.